Welcome to a deep dive of SSI's 2016 and VNEX. My name is Sandy Winarko. I work in information management, which is part of Microsoft Data Group based in Shanghai. My team developed value-added services that got bundled with SQL Server, mainly SQL Server Integration Services, or SSIS, Master Data Services, or MDS, and Data Quality Services, or DQS. In this session, I would like to take you to show you how to use the latest Azure feature pack for SSIS to inject data into Azure Data Lake Store, or ADLS, and SQL Data Warehouse in preparation for your big data analytics workload in the cloud. In the second part of the session, I will take you deep dive into a new scale-up feature for SSIS, deploying it end-to-end from cluster installation to parallel execution in order to help you reduce the overall runtime of your workflows. At the end of the session, hopefully you can actually modernize your ETL workflows into a scalable hybrid ETL and ELT workflows. Sorry, I have to stand here actually. So before, without further ado, let's do a brief introduction of SSIS and Azure Feature Pack. Anyone here never heard or never used SSIS before? Just in case. So I do have to go through the deck. Okay. So I'll do a brief introduction. SSIS is a platform to build enterprise-grade data integration solution. It offers user-friendly, code-free authoring and management tools in the form of SQL Server Data Tools, SSDT, and SQL Server Management Studio, or SSMS. It also offers a wealth of data connectors and rich transformation tasks to help you extract, transform, and load data from various sources to various destinations in the cloud and on-premises. All this you can do with a very low total cost of ownership. On the left-hand side, you can see that's the SSDT tool. On the right-hand side is SSMS, SQL Server Management Studio. The Azure Feature Pack itself is an extension to SSIS that offers Azure connectivity components. It allows customers to do essentially three things in a progressive manner. The first thing they can do is actually move and transfer data between various sources and destination on-premises and in Azure. Once they have their data in Azure, they can use the Azure Feature Pack also to develop ELT workflows, for example, to add big data transformation or processing, like HD Insight, for example, or Azure Data Lake Analytics, etc. Once you have ELT workflows, you can also combine with your traditional ETL workflows, and you can do this across the whole on-premises and Azure. And all this you can do using the familiar interface, which is SSDT and SSMS. Last December, we have released three new components in Azure Feature Pack. The first three components, it will help you to connect SSIS to ADLS, which is the Azure Data Lake Store. These components are Azure Data Lake Connection Manager, or ADLS Connection Manager, ADLS Source, and ADLS Destination. Those three components you can find inside the SSIS toolbox when you create data flows using SSDT. And the last component is a SQL Data Warehouse upload task. You can find this component also in SSIS toolbox when you create control flow using SSDT. All these components, first we have released to support SQL Server 2016, and we have backported them to also support SQL Server 2012 and 2016. So let's see how to use the Azure Feature Pack to connect SSIS with ADLS. A quick introduction of ADLS. ADLS is a hyperscale repository or storage of all kind of data. It can be structured, unstructured, or semi-structured, and this data is used for your big data analytics workload in the cloud. Once you have your data inside Azure Data Lake Store, you can actually use HD Insight to curate or process it further, or you can use Azure Data Lake Analytics, which is essentially a managed HD Insight, and the result, you can actually visualize it or store it in a SQL Data Warehouse or visualize it using Power BI. There are many ways and methods to inject data to move data to and from ADLS,
SSI is one of those methods that allow you to do that using the familiar SSMS or SSDT interface. ADLS use AAD, which is Azure Active Directory, for authentication. So for us to connect SSIS to ADLS, we have created ADLS Connection Manager that will also use AAD for authentication. There are two options for authentication. The first option is end-user authentication using AAD user identity. In this method, SSIS will connect to ADLS on behalf of end-user. The end user will sign in using their own access credential, and by doing so through the AAD consent framework, the user will provide consent and actually delegate the ADLS access permission to SSIS. The second option is actually a service-to-service authentication. In this case, SSIS will connect to ADLS as a service principal. So it's using its own service identity and credential to connect to ADLS. There is pros and cons on this option, and we will see the trade-off between these options, okay? For example, in the first option using end-user authentication, the end-user does not have to do a lot of work. We have done a lot of work for them by creating a multi-tenant AAD app for SSIS. All the end-user or the customer have to do is just sign in with their access credential. So, for example, you see on the left-hand side there, the user just need to enter the username and password. And if they have done so already or before, they will be presented with a consent dialog. In this consent dialog, it will show what kind of permission that the user need to delegate to SSIS so SSIS can connect to ADLS. So it is very easy for the user to use. There's not a lot of work they have to do. But there are some limitations in the type of account supported by this method. So first of all, it cannot support org ID or corporate account that has a multi-factor authentication enabled. Secondly, it cannot support MSA or consumer account that end up with a domain like life.com or hotmail.com or outlook.com. So those are the limitations with this option. In the second option, which is service-to-service authentication, there is no such limitation with account type, but the user have to do a little bit more work. They have to actually go to the Azure portal and set up a single-tenant AAD app for SSIS and provide a permission for that app to access ADLS. So the process for this, I have included it in the link at the end of the deck. You can follow the process, and at the end of the process, you have three things to enter into ADLS Connection Manager. Essentially, you have to enter the app ID, the secret key, and the tenant name. Once you do that, now you are ready to connect to ADLS, and you can actually start using creating data flows with ADLS destination to write data into ADLS, or with ADLS source to read data from ADLS. Let's see how to do it with ADLS destination. On the destination editor, for example, first you can select the connection manager that you just created before, or you can create a new one. You can define the destination file path inside ADLS. You can select the destination file formats in the ADLS, and also you can map the destination and source columns. In terms of format, we support text, text format, Avro, and ORC. In the case of ORC format, you need to make sure that you also install GRE, which is Java Runtime Environment, on the same machine where you install SSIS, because this is needed for the data serialization to write data into ADLS. On the source editor, when you want to actually read data from ADLS as a source, you can do the same thing. In the editor, you can select the connection manager that you have created before, or you can create a new one. You can define the source file path. You can also select the source file formats. And you can also define the data type or metadata for the source columns. For file formats, we only support for the source, text, and Avro formats. So now you are essentially with these three components, ADLS Connection Manager, Source, and Destination, you can connect and write data or read data from ADLS. Let's see how, using the Azure Feature Pack, let's see how you can connect to SQL Data Warehouse now. A quick introduction on SQL Data Warehouse. SQL Data Warehouse is a Microsoft scale-out database in the cloud. It's built on massively parallel processing architecture, or MPP. It has the capability of processing huge volume of data, both relational and non-relational. It does so by dividing the processing capability across multiple nodes. It has a control node, a single control node, that receives queries, optimized queries, and distribute these queries across multiple compute nodes that work in parallel. There are many ways to inject data into SQL Data Warehouse. As you can see on the diagram, SSIS is just one of the methods. In the past, a customer already can inject SQL data into SQL Data Warehouse using SSIS through two methods. The first method is front-loading through the compute node using data flows. The second method is backloading through the compute nodes using Polybase. We'll see the pros and cons of this method, and we'll see the trade-off. For example, in the first loading method, front loading, you can essentially create a standard data flow using ADO.NET or OLEDB destination, similar to the way you inject data into SQL Server database or SQL Azure database, right? As you can see in the diagram, there's an inherent or like a built-in bottlenecks in this method. The first bottleneck is the single control node within the SQL Data Warehouse itself. The second bottleneck is the single SSIS running machine. So you can actually remove the first bottleneck by loading data in parallel using multiple SSIS running machine. But the problem is you have to do it manually in this case. In this case, you have to break up the input data into multiple sources, loading them concurrently or parallel into like temporary tables inside SQL Data Warehouse, and then you have to switch all these temporary tables into partition in the final table. So there's some work to do, but you do actually get a performance gain through the parallel loading. Unfortunately, the second bottleneck is not affected. Essentially, the overall throughput is gated still by the SQL Data Warehouse control node. The SQL Data Warehouse control node is a single node, and it does not scale out. Even if you buy more and more data warehouse unit, you're adding more and more compute nodes, it still will limit the connection and processing capacity will limit the overall throughput of your data loading. So let's see the second method of injecting data to SQL Data Warehouse. The second method is through backloading using the compute nodes now and triggering Polybase. User can actually use SSIS to create execute SQL tasks that triggers Polybase, leveraging the MPP architecture of SQL Data Warehouse. Anyone understand what Polybase is? Have you been to the session about Polybase? No one? Anyone ever heard of Polybase before? Okay, I'll go through it. So Polybase is a technology from Microsoft to combine and access relational and non-relational data from within Microsoft RDBMS using the standard T-SQL commands. It does it by defining the non-relational data as an external table. So the table definition is stored inside the SQL Data Warehouse or inside RDBMS, any other RDBMS that support Polybase. And T-SQL command can refer to that external non-relational data just like any standard table. And as you can see in that diagram, for example, you can have non-relational data stored in Hadoop or Azure Blob Storage, and you can use Polybase to access it from SQL Server 2016 on-premises, or APS, which is an analytics platform system. This is used to be called a parallel data warehouse, which is the on-premise version of SQL Data Warehouse. Unfortunately, from my last check on the yellow line, SQL Data Warehouse only support Polybase to access non-relational data stored in Azure Blob Storage for now. Maybe in the future it will support Hadoop, but as of now, we actually have to build a SQL Data Warehouse upload task through a staging area in Azure Blob Storage first. Okay, let's see how to do this. So with this method, the parallel loading will be done automatically. You don't have to do a manual breaking down of the input data like in the first front loading method. So the overall throughput is actually will scale out. The more you buy a data warehouse unit, the more compute nodes added, and the higher your throughput. So it sounds great, and this is actually the recommended fastest method to inject data into SQL Data Warehouse. But In the past, it comes with a price. Using SSIS, actually, you have to create multiple tasks to do this. As you can see, for example, you have to first create a transformation task to make sure that the input data is in a supported format. For example, if your input data is actually a text file, at the last time I checked, Polybase is only support UTF-8 encoded text format. So in this case, if your source data is UTF-16, for example, you have to create a transformation task to basically change it into UTF-8. Once you do that, you probably have to create an Azure Blob Upload task. The Azure Blob Upload task will upload this supported format into Azure Blob storage for staging so that you can actually later trigger Polybase. After that, you have to create an execute SQL task to define the input data inside Azure Blob Storage as an external table and trigger Polybase to load this external table into the SQL data warehouse. And finally, you might also want to create a cleanup task, right? So this is all pain, like a lot of pains to do it before in the past. So to address these pain points, we actually recently create a SQL data warehouse upload task, a single component inside Azure feature pack that will automate task number 2, 3, and 4. But the true benefit of this SQL data warehouse upload task is actually it saves you time from writing a lot of these SQL scripts. In the past, I will show you what kind of script that normally you have to write. With this upload task, all this script will be automatically generated and customizable. I'll show you. For example, in the past, you have to create a script to configure the access credential to your staging area, the Azure Blob Storage. And then you have to define the data source in Azure Blob Storage using this configured access credential. You have to create a script to define the file format of your input data. And then you also have to create a script to define the external table of the input data stored in your Azure Blob Storage. And finally, you have to create a script to trigger Polybase, which is basically a create table as Slack, to load the external table into SQL data warehouse. All these scripts goes away, not in terms of going away, but it goes away from you having to write it. With the SQL data warehouse upload task, all of them will be created automatically. I'll show you later in the editor how it is created. So let's see what is the typical customer scenario. Sorry. Okay, let's see the typical customer scenario that can benefit from a SQL data warehouse upload task. For example, imagine an e-commerce company that has a lot of transaction data stored in a SQL database on the premises. The company wants to upload and basically all this transactional data into SQL data warehouse in the cloud so they can use big data analytics or Power BI to visualize it, etc. Right? In the past, the company will first have to do step zero to export this data into a FAT file on premises. Step one, it has to actually upload this FAT file into Azure Blob Storage. Step two, you have to define the external table representing this FAT file in Azure Blob Storage. And step three, you have to trigger Polybase. So I'm repeating again the case. Essentially, SQL Data Warehouse upload task automates step 1, 2, and 3. And you can see it in the editor. This is the SQL Data Warehouse upload task editor. As you can see, what you can do is it's divided into several panels where you can configure different components of the task. First one is you define the task, either if it's creating a new table inside the data warehouse or inserting to an existing table. Next, you can select and configure the source file formats. For example, in this case, UTF-8 encoded text files. Next, on the staging area, you can select the Azure Blob Connection Manager to connect to your Azure Blob Storage. In that part, you can actually define the cleanup task. You can decide, after the upload test, if you want to clean up the staging area by not retaining the files that used for staging, for example. And then finally, you can also select and configure the ADO.NET Connection Manager to connect to SQL Data Warehouse and decide if you want to create a new table or inserting to an existing table. And finally, the standard one, you can, in the steps, you can also map source and the destination columns. And you can define the metadata and data type for the source columns. Once you do all this, in the next page, in the T-SQL menu there, you can see all the script is created automatically. It will just run as you define it in the previous page, but you can also actually further customize it. If you click on the edit button, you can enter your own, you can insert your own custom script to fulfill basically your specific needs. Okay? So is essentially how you use all this Azure Feature Pack to inject data into ADLS and SQL Data Warehouse. Next, I would actually, in the interest of saving times, I will just run a video of the demo to showcase ADLS connectivity components and SQL Data Warehouse upload test, because I would like to save more time to run a live demo for a scale-out feature, which is actually a bit more involved. And also maybe that way you can also leave for the party like sooner or something. All right, let me run the video. First, I'll show you the demo environment. I have like a provision Azure VM. I have installed SQL Server 2016, SSIS, and also the Azure Feature Pack extension. And I have created a package with two data flows. Essentially, the first data flow is very simple. The first data flows will showcase the ADLS destination to upload a file from desktop to ADLS. And then the second data flow will essentially showcase the ADLS source to read data from ADLS in the cloud and put it back into the desktop in the second file. Let me run the video. So I open the remote desktop. Show you the source file, which is just of 4 rows of table. The destination file is still empty. And open SSDT, I'll show you the package with the two data flows. And in this case, I have created two connection manager for ADLS. The first one is using service identity, where I create the process for a single tenant AAD app. I've entered the app ID, secret key, and the tenant name. And I've also created a connection manager with the end user authentication, where I just put my username and password in there. I can use one or the other to create my data flow. So the first data flow will use a data lake destination, and it'll use the user identity authentication option. It defined the file format in the ADLS. And the second data flow is using ADLS source to read from ADLS. And it use also the same user identity authentication option. So let's run this package. So it's running. The first flow data flow is done. Second data flow is done, and we'll see the result will be copied from the source file into the destination file, going through ADLS. There you go. So the destination file is the same with the source file. Okay. The second demo, I will showcase the SQL Data Warehouse upload tasks. I will use the same demo environment. I've created a package with two tasks. The first task is actually uploading a file from the desktop, the same file that I used in the previous demo, to create a new table inside SQL Data Warehouse. And then it's followed by the second task that actually uploading the same file but inserting into the newly created table. So at the end, in the SQL Data Warehouse, you have a new table with 8 rows. I'll show you the other demo. So the source is the same. And I'll show you the package on SSDT. It has two tasks, create table and insert table. Well, I'll show you first the Azure Blob Connection Manager to connect to your staging area. And that is the ADO.NET Connection Manager to connect to your data warehouse. That will be used inside the upload task. The first task essentially will create a table, a new table. You find the source on the desktop, file1.txt.
and the format with the row delimiter, column delimiter, etc. And here in the staging area, I also define the cleanup task to make sure that there's no files are retained. And then on the data warehouse, I make sure that a new table is created. That's the first upload task. The second upload task is actually inserting to that table. I do the same thing, same file, also input. Also set up the same staging area and also clean up after this task. And in this case, it's inserting into table one that was created in the earlier task. So let's run this package. So the first task is done, second task is done. And we'll see the result in SQL Data Warehouse. We'll see it from SSMS. We connect to our SQL Data Warehouse account. And let's see the table, if it's created and inserted with this new data. I'll refresh it, and there's a new table will be there. There, table one. And I will see the content. It should be 8 rows. The first 4 rows is from creation, and the second 4 rows will be from insertion. So that's it. It works. Okay. So now we enter to the my favorite part of the session. This is the one that I want to spend most of the time. We are going to deep dive into this new scale-out feature for SSIS. You can have this you can actually play around with it in the CTP 1, from CTP 1.0 release. It's in the public preview right now for SQL Server 2017 VNEX. So let me give you a background. Recently, from telemetry and from a customer survey, we see a very clear trend where the overall execution time of workflows for all kind of customer across all industry, it just keep increasing. There's no dip. It's all keep increasing. The driver for this increasing execution time or runtime is there are 3 reasons. The first is actually the increasing number of packages. For example, our internal customer, Microsoft IT, they have thousands of packages executed from many departments. There's MSIT Finance, MSIT Marketing, etc. They have thousands of packages executed every day. Secondly, the increasing volume of data to be processed inside this package. And not only that, not only the volume of data increasing, the transformation task they use is with increasing complexity. So all these 3 reasons combined make sure that the execution time for the whole workflow just keep on increasing. So our customer are desperate, and they're actually requesting us to provide a scale-out solution. They have 2 criteria for us. It's very simple. They actually want a scale-out solution that can be deployed not only on premises, but also in the cloud, and both. So you can have a cluster that goes all over the place. And they want to be able to manage this cluster through the same similar interface, which is SSDT and SSMS. That's a simple, basically, early requirement that they ask for us, right? And for a lift and shift customer who wants to lift, to bring all their SSIS investment into the cloud, they're actually requesting a combined scale-up and scale-out solution. The scale-up, basically, they want to be able to decide the compute power of their node, and then they want to decide the number of their nodes in the cluster. So in this way, they have 2 ways to reduce the overall execution time for their workflows. Okay. So in order to answer the customer request, we have released SSI scale-out feature recently. Starting from SQL Server VNEX 1.0 release onwards. We are right now in CTP 1.3, I believe. I think it's in April. And then the general availability will be sometimes closer to the end of the year. And this scale-out solution, the key thing is we are aiming for flexibility. So it can be deployed on a cluster of machine, on-premises, in Azure, and let me tell you a little secret, it can also be deployed on a VM, on Amazon Amazon Web Service, or Google Cloud, as long as they're running Windows Server for now. But essentially, you can use any cloud solution, any on-premises machine, this cluster solution will work fine. Okay.
And it has, essentially, it consists of a scale-out master and multiple scale-out workers. And it offers parallel execution initially in a, at the package level. What does it mean? Package level parallel execution means when you submit a request to execute multiple packages, the solution will automatically distribute these packages across multiple nodes so that they can be executed in parallel. So it's all automatic. You don't have to actually decide which machine will take which package. Okay? And the solution also extends the traditional SSISDB catalog. This catalog traditionally stores only SSIS project and package information. Now we have extended it to store information about the scale-out worker. So in this case, back to the original requirement, the customer can manage their machine or they can manage their cluster through SSMS, and they can submit parallel execution through SSMS. The scale-out master machine will host the SSISDB and a master service. The scale-out worker machine will host a worker service and SSIS engine. A master service is a Windows service that actually manage the whole scale-out operation and distribute multiple packages to the various worker services. The worker services will take these packages, initiate SSIS engine to execute locally in parallel. Both of these Windows services will communicate securely over SSL. I'll show you how to establish a reciprocal authentication between these two services when you start to install it. But first, let's have a walkthrough on the execution flow and how does this cluster work. Let's say a customer submit a request to execute package A. They do it through SSMS, and this request will be stored in SSISDB. The master service that's running will read SSISDB and create a new task, which is execute package A task. And also it will store the execution context, which is the package A itself and the runtime information. Now, there are many worker services that are running. Some of the worker services that are available to execute packages will start connecting to the master service and asking, like, give me a new task to execute. So the master service will identify what is the next task to execute, in this case, execute package A, and assign it to the worker service on a first-come, first-served basis. Once the worker service gets this task, it will request for more information, the execution context, which is package A, and runtime information. And then it will just, once it has all the information it needs, it will initiate SSIS engine to execute the package itself. In the meantime, it will continue monitoring the execution status, report or update the status to master service, and also write execution log to SSISDB. At the end of execution, worker service will clean up the execution environment. It will update the final status to master service, and it will go back to master service to request for a new task to execute. So this is essentially how the cluster works in a nutshell. So now you know how it works. Let's see how to install it, okay? To install the cluster, you have to install the scale-out master and the scale-out worker. Let's see how to install the scale-out master first. So using the familiar SQL Server installation wizards, you have to install the SQL Server database engine and the scale-out master on the same machine. On the feature selection page, you can either select just install scale-out master, or you can actually select both scale-out master and scale-out worker to install side-by-side on the same machine. The reason why is because scale-out master is a pretty light process. You can actually have those two in the same machine. And there's some advantage of how of doing this. I will show you later when we actually is going to the worker installation. Okay. Next, on the SQL Server installation wizard, on the server configuration, you have to select a Windows account to start master service and the startup method. If you don't have any reason why you want to create or you have a specific Windows account, default new Windows account will be created for you, and it will automatically start master service by default. And next, before we go to the scale-out master configuration itself, make sure that you also need to configure the DB engine to you need to select a mixed mode of authentication. Normally, it just allow Windows authentication, but in this case, you have to enable SQL authentication. The reason why is because later on, the worker service will need to access SSISDB to write execution logs, and that requires SQL authentication. Oh, sorry, too fast. On the scale-up master configuration page, which is the final part of the master installation, you have to specify the port as well as the SSL master certificate, server certificate, sorry, for master service and worker service communication. In this case, for the port, by default, we have assigned 8391. You can obviously choose a different port. And for the server certificate, you have two choices. Either you create a default self-signed certificate, or you can use an existing certificate that's already installed under Trusted Root Certification Authorities. If you select a default self-signed server certificate, the new certificate will be created, installed the same way under Trusted Root Certification Authorities, and the corresponding client certificate can be used later in the worker installation to authenticate the master. So I guess the next phase is to install the scale-out worker. In this step, you have to do it across all the scale-out machine. So if you have, for example, if you have 10 scale-out machine, you have to install scale-out worker on all this machine. But in the worker installation, you don't have to install the database engine. You only need to select on the feature selection page the scale-out worker. And then next, the same way like when you're installing the master, you also have to select a Windows account to start the worker service. There's some reason why you want to do this in this case, in the worker installation. For example, if you have a source or destination that requires a special account, and the worker service need to access this data source or data destination, then you might not want to use the default Windows account. But in any case, default one will be created, and the worker service will be started automatically.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. So you just select this one. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to do the DB engine. You don't have to do SSAS or SSRS or whatever.
Do you need full media to install?
No. No. You just go from the web. Sorry. Well, for right now, I mean, you can use the CTP release, right? We are still working on the licensing price. Obviously, in the scale-out worker, you should not pay for the full SQL license, right? But we still don't know yet how we're going to license it and how we're going to price it. By the time of general availability, sometimes in September, October, we'll have the price. So that way, now it's still free, so play around with it. I don't know yet. We are still working on it. Like we're still working on the business model of this because essentially you only need the SQL Server license for the master, while you only need SSIS on the workers, right? So like we are still working on how to price it and how to license it. But hey, try it out. It's free now. So okay. Next, on the scale-out worker scale-out worker configuration. Remember, in the master installation, we specify the port for master worker communication. Here, on the worker installation, you have to specify the master connection point. The master connection endpoint is essentially formed from the scale-out master machine name or IP address appended by the port that we defined before, which is in this case 8391. And on the client certificate, it's the same, like I mentioned before. In this case, the SSL client certificate is already stored in the master machine in a folder under the SQL Server installation directory, right? You can either do manually, go to the master machine, take the client certificate and put it in the worker machine and install it under Trusted Root Certification Authorities, or run and use an MMC, like a Microsoft Management Console, to export and import that certificate from master machine to all the worker machine. This is pretty standard admin works, right? Now imagine all the, on the cluster, you have the scale-out worker in, installed on the all the worker machine, and the scale-out master installed in the master machine. But they're not running yet, and we still have to do a little bit configuration to make sure that they, there is a reciprocal communication and all the services are stored. So let's see how to finalize the installation. So reciprocally, the same thing. Before, we have to install the client certificate for worker to authenticate master. Now we have to install the client certificate for master to authenticate worker. So this is the same thing. You go to either, you go to all the worker machine, find the client certificate in the same directory, bring it to the master and install it, or use MMC to export and import certificate from worker machine to master machine. It's just a mirror image working, what do you call mirror image work, reciprocal. And finally, you have to make sure that you use a Windows firewall app. You need to make sure that you add inbound traffic rule to open the port such that the worker service can communicate to the master service through port 8391 by default, and also for the worker service to write execution log into SSISDB through port 1433, which is a standard SQL Server port, right? And now you have to assume that like we set up the installation such that the worker service and master service all started automatically. That'll be great. But in case they are not, you can use the Windows Service app to check if all the master service and all the worker service are all running. If they're not, you have to restart it. It's important that all the worker service are running so that it can connect to the master service to register itself. When the worker service registers to master service, master service will assign a unique worker agent's ID that will be stored inside catalog worker agent view inside SSISDB. This unique worker agent ID is required to enable the cluster later, which is the last step in this installation. So, sorry? No, you can restart it. Like for now, you actually have to go to the, in the our first release, right? You can actually have to go to the remote desktop to find out if the worker is running or not. But in later releases, we will have a machine management console or cluster management console. You can see on all your worker which one running, what is the utilization percentage, etc. If it's something that's broken or hang, you can just restart it. In terms of? Yeah, of course. Yeah, you can actually you can keep increasing the number of machine or reduce if one of the machine is a fail or a lost, the other one is still working and they're still requesting tasks from the master. But the idea that I like to emphasize is like later on you can manage the whole cluster resizing it, scaling out, scaling in through this machine management console that we will release later on in the year. Okay, so this is the final step for installation. Right now you install all the master, you install all the worker, they all configure to talk to each other. Now you just need to flip the switch on and turn the cluster, the whole cluster on, right? And you can do this through the single interface, which is SSMS. On SSMS, when you create the on this, that's actually running on the scale-out master. When you create the catalog, SSISDB, you need to make sure that you check enable this server or scale-out master. When you do that, scale-out master is switched on. And then later on, for each scale-out worker, you have to iterate across all the unique worker agent's ID, and you have to execute a stored procedure, which is called catalog enable worker agent, with all this unique worker agent ID, to switch on and enable all the workers. Right now, this is still manual. You actually have to do it manually to execute stored procedure one by one, right? In the future, you will be able to just point and click to enable the cluster. And now, at this moment, the cluster is installed, configured, and up and running, ready to receive execution. And I'll show you how to execute the packages in parallel using this cluster. Any questions so far?
It doesn't have any Microsoft clustering behind it. It's just the way that it's
Yeah, when I say cluster, it's essentially the solution where you have multiple nodes with one master and multiple worker. The only criteria right now is like all those nodes has to run a Windows Server. But they can be a Windows Server running in, like I said, in Amazon or Google Cloud or on your premises, on your basement or in Azure. They all can be connected and running as a cluster of scale-out for SSIS, essentially. Could be in the future. For now, not yet, but we're thinking about that. We heard that question already, but we're planning for it. Okay. Next. Oh, sorry, I'm jumping here. Okay, now we're going through the execution. How to submit the execution? Okay, so imagine you have you authored many packages already, multiple hundred thousand, whatever, right? And you deploy it to SSIS DB in the scale-out master machine. So with SSMS, you can go to SSIS DB, which is the catalog, and right-click and select the menu which says execute in scale-out. That's essentially submit a request to SSDB to execute packages in parallel. When you do that, it opens a dialog window with two pages. The first one is package selection. In here, you can have all the packages that have been deployed to SSISDB, and you can select all of them to be executed in parallel, or you can right now manually select or separate, like for example, heavy packages together, or like a light packages together, because later in the machine selection page, you can actually assign all the heavy packages has to be executed by the big nodes. All the light packages have to be executed by small nodes, for example. But by default, all machine will participate in a parallel execution. Right now, it's still you have to do manual, like if you want to like assign certain package to certain machine. In the future, you can actually tag packages and machine. So we can actually see like when the worker service requests a new task, we'll say like how much core you have, how much power you have. If you have only two, we have a big package next to be executed. You are not powerful enough. We have next. We'll find the next worker to do it, for example. But that's like coming in the next CTP release. Oh, by the way, before that, let me just go back. On the package selection dialog also, you can actually further configure the package. You can actually provide more parameters, change the connection manager, and you can set an advanced option, for example, the number of retry count. So if a package fail, you can tell them like retry three times or four times whenever the package execution fails, for example. Sorry? Yes, like for example, in the package configuration in the parameters, you can actually set like what kind of parameter you want to run. And then if you want to change connection manager, for example, like in ADLS, you want to switch from end-user authentication to service authentication. You can do that in there, for example. Go ahead. At this moment, it will retry on the same worker. As long as the worker is not hang or crash, but in the future we might actually consider like we might actually push the package to a different worker that's more available. If the reason why it failed is actually machine related, we might actually want to distribute it like how Service Fabric works, right? If a worker is actually the cause of the package execution fail, not the package itself, then we can probably. But right now it'll be a retry on the same worker, for example. Actually, this might not come in here because what we're aiming for the scale-out solution is actually flexibility. When we mean flexibility, it means like you can do whatever you want, but you have to do it yourself. In the future, it's actually where we are talking about the managed SSI service, then we will have a scale-out solution, which is actually a little bit less flexible, but it has all these automated things that where you can tell like a I want it to be turned off when all my package is already executed. I don't have to go back to Azure portal to actually turn off the machine. It will turn off by itself, for example. But that is a different proposition, right? This is basically a scale out on IaaS. What we're talking about is a scale out on PaaS. Sorry.
How apparent should
Good question.
Are they on the same worker or?
You mean like yeah, it's we basically what we call the EPTs parallelization, execute package test, right? This is something that we're looking at because right now the first release is just package level. The package is essentially the lowest, the smallest execution unit. In the future, when we actually support EPT parallelization, for that I don't know yet because we're still going through the backlog. We have to decide which feature of scale-out, because there's another feature that's very important that has to actually goes before if we have even considered this EPT parallelization. But in this case, with our EPT parallelization, a worker will receive the package that has actually a parent package with a child package, right? When it hits the child package, it will just put it back to the master, and the master will reschedule the child package as a section unit for other worker to pick up. But that's future, basically.
Just at the moment, we can have one worker per server. Is it possible to have multiple workers?
Not yet. Right now, it's only one worker per machine, but that's another like feature that we might consider. Sorry. The whole cluster, or?
Oh, no, the window, the SQL Server cluster, because you've got the databases for the master on the cluster.
I will show you. This is actually, that's exactly the right question, because that's actually the most requested enhancement to this cloud solution. Basically, what to do to offer a high availability or disaster recovery through a failover solution. I'll show you. That's actually the last page. I'll show you. All right. So, in this case, you select the machine that will execute those packages in parallel. In this case, I only create two workers. You can have like hundreds worker here. Let me rephrase that. In the beginning, we actually will support up to 20. The reason why is because back to that the high availability question. Right now, there might be a bottleneck on the SSISDB, because the more worker created, the more they are trying to write execution log to SSISDB, right? So we have to actually perf tune the SSISDB, or maybe implement an always-on solution later on, so we can actually increase the number of worker infinitely, for example. But right now, for example, in here, I have two workers. By default, the two workers will participate in the parallel execution, but you can actually say, let's say you have five big nodes and three small nodes. And if you have your package requiring a heavy compute machine, then you just pick the big nodes. You don't use the compute nodes, the small nodes, because it'll take forever for the small nodes, for example.
If package gets redeployed,
Well, for now, the algorithm is very basic, right? Like, it will pick the package that's being deployed in a first in, first out, and it will assign to the worker on a first come, first serve basis. So, in the case of the next deployment, the first comes worker is actually a different worker, then that one will get it. But we will provide a way such that, like, we'll make sure that, like, a certain worker with a certain characteristic can pick up a certain package. This is where you can tag the package with the and match it with the what type of worker that's capable to execute the package. But right now, that's in the future, right? Like right now, it's very simple. First in, first out, first come, first serve. Simple like that. Okay? So now, I'll go to your question. And this is actually when we did a webcast of this solution, a lot of customers are asking about it. How about failover solution? What happened if the whole cluster fail? So what we're planning to do is like in the next release, this is like the top feature that we will do, because this is the most important according to our customers, is to actually replicate the SSISDB in an always-on cluster and reduce the pressure, the load on SSISDB by spinning off a LogDB. So actually, the execution log will not be written anymore in SSISDB, but it will be written in LogDB that themselves are replicated in an always-on cluster. So we'll try to make sure that it's resilient and highly available. And the master itself, we're going to have a multiple master service running a network load balancing cluster.
So that's the plan for the future. So like, let's say like a one master is failing and the other one will pick up. Sorry. Oh, you mean in the workflow? Oh, okay.
Is that functionality going to be, is already in the agents as well? So if you schedule it, that you can change the settings in the agent as well?
You mean like this tagging of the package and on the workers? Yeah. You can. This solution will still work with SQL Agent because SQL Agent is essentially the interface of SQL Agent is the Scout Master, the SSIS DB essentially. So it doesn't matter. We still can actually use a stored procedure to like execute in scale out. So you can actually still use the.
You've got a script out to scale out the job and then run it as a script, not a feature of like go now execute from SSIS catalog and you select your packages.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do that. You should be able to do that. Because like right now, the way I show you the execution pattern is using SSMS, right? But you can write a script or a Windows scheduler or a SQL agent to do the same thing instead of like going to SSMS and click, for example. Sorry? There's a question down there? No? Okay. So I will try to run a demo in real time. I'll show you the demo setup. I've provisioned three VMs. One is one scale-out master with two scale-out worker. And I also have created two similar package, right? A simple package. It will upload a table, basically extract a table from SQL DB 1 and load it into table 1 in SQL DB 2. The second package is similar, except it will extract table 2 from SQL DB 1 and load it in table 2 in SQL DB 2. By the way, the SQL DB is on Azure also. So they're all running in Azure right now. So two SQL Azure, I have two packages moving tables between those two, and it will do it in parallel using this cluster of one master and two worker. Okay, let's run the demo. Let's see. So let me show you the package itself first. This is a scale out project. So the first package, let me show you. And you can see both here, the ADO.NET connection manager for both the SQL Azure. The data flow is simple, basically moving table from one Azure database to another Azure database. The second data flow is similar, except in this case, it will move table 2 from a database 1 to table 2 in database 2, essentially. And I have deployed these packages into the scale-out master in the SSISDB, so I can show you on the SSMS. See, this is the scale-out master machine. Let's see. So demo, projects, scale-out project, packages. You see, these two in the middle, those are the two parallel packages that I have deployed. I'll show you the source destination, the source database. The tables, which is table 1. Let's see what's content. So table 1 has these two rows, very simple. 1, 2, 3, ABC. Table 2 also have two rows. It's 3, 4, 5, DEF. Yeah. And then you can, and the destination database, also in Azure, they should have empty table right now. So, see, this is destination table 1. It should be empty now, yes. Table 2 should be empty also. Okay, so we are ready to execute. On SSIS DB node, you right-click and execute in scale-out. Once you do that, it will basically do what I showed you before. The worker will try to pull tasks. Worker 1 will get a package. Worker 2 will get the package and execute in parallel. And I'll show you the execution report at the same time. So that's right. I'll just pick the two package that like I want before, right? And then on the machine selection, both of them by automatically, if you don't do anything, both of them will participate in the parallel execution. I hit OK. Now it's running. And let's see the report. Whole execution. It's still running, you see? There's two execution ID running. Refresh. One is succeeded. Second one is succeeded. We'll see, let's say execution ID number 54 is executed by worker 1 here, right? And execution ID number 53 should be executed by worker 2. There you go. It's parallel execution automatic, and I'll show you the result. So now in the destination database, table 1 should have the same content like the table 1 in the source. Exactly, 123 ABC, and table 2 should be 345 DEF. That's it. That's the demo. Okay, now let me see where we are. All right, so we saw the demo, so we can skip the video, which is basically the same thing that I just ran live. These are the resources that you can find. To follow the steps, like this is more details. Basically, my deck is a summary of all this stuff that you can find here. It's all like public information. It's MSDN pages and TechNet, basically. All right, all the resources is there. You want to take a picture? Sure. Sure. And then, well, this is basically all the formalities. You can also find the deck later on. I think it's a 1 week after this thing. And please fill out the evaluation if you want to get a drone. And then you get there's a party afterwards. You can crack the wristband. And that's it. And that's my email, by the way. If you have more questions, just send me email. Okay? And give us more suggestion to improve the solution. Okay? Thank you.